Nicky took out the butcher knife and set it quietly on the table. Richard had suffered enough. It would be for the best. Chapter 59. Nicky sat at the table, the knife under her fingers, forever. She watched his back. His chest slowly expanded with his breath of life and sank again. There was time enough to slip the knife into his back, between his ribs, to pierce his heart. There was time enough yet before dawn. Death was so final. She wanted to watch him for a while. Nicky never tired of watching Richard. After she did it, she wouldn't be able to watch him anymore. He would be gone forever. With the damage the chimes had done to the worlds and their interconnection, she didn't even know if a person's soul could still go to the spirit world. She didn't even know if the underworld still existed, and if Richard's spirit would go there, or if he would simply be gone forever. If he and that which was his soul would simply cease to exist. In her numb state, she had lost track of time. When she glanced out the window that Richard had had installed with the money he had earned, she noticed that the sky had taken on the color of a week-old bruise. Linked as she was to Kalin, Nicky couldn't accomplish the deed with her magic. As much as she abhorred the idea of it, and knowing how gruesome it would be, she had to use the sharp blade. Nicky curled her fingers around the wooden handle of the stout knife. She wanted it to be quick. She couldn't bear to think of him suffering. He had suffered enough in life. She didn't want him to suffer in death, too. He would struggle briefly, but then it would be over. Richard abruptly rolled onto his back and then sat up. Nicky froze, still sitting in her chair. He rubbed the sleep from his eyes. Could she kill him when he was awake? Could she look into those eyes of his as she plunged the knife into his chest? She would have to. It was for the best. Richard yawned and stretched. He sprang to his feet. Nicky, what are you doing? Haven't you gone to bed?
I guess I fell asleep in the chair.
Oh, well, there it is. I need that. He snatched the knife out of her hand. Mind if I borrow this? I need to use it. I'm afraid I'll have to sharpen it for you later. I won't have time before I have to leave. Can you make me something to eat? I'm in a hurry. I have to go see Victor before I start to work. Nicky was dumbfounded. He was suddenly revived. In the lamplight and the faint dawn coming in the windows, he had that look in his eyes. He looked resolute, determined.
Yes, all right, she said.
Thanks, he called over his shoulder while hurrying out the door. Where are you? But he was gone. She decided he must be going out back to get some vegetables. But why would he need the big knife for that? She was confused. But she was revived, too. Richard seemed himself again. Nicky pulled from the pantry some eggs she had been saving, along with an iron skillet, and hurried out back to the cooking hearth. The coals were still glowing from the cook fires of the evening before, providing a little light. She carefully fed in some small twigs and kindling, then stacked a bed of finger-thick branches on top. She simply set the iron skillet atop the wood as it caught, rather than set up the rack. Eggs were quick. As she waited for the skillet to get hot, she heard an odd scraping noise. In the flickering light of the fire, she didn't see Richard in the garden. She couldn't imagine where he had gone or what he was up to. She broke the eggs into the hot skillet and tossed the shells in the compost bucket at the side of the hearth. With a wooden spoon, she scrambled the eggs around as they cooked. As Nicky stood, using her skirt to hold the hot handle of the skillet, she was surprised to see Richard coming out from behind the broad cooking hearth.
"Richard, what are you doing?"
"There are some loose bricks back here. I was just seeing to it before I went to work. I cleaned out the joints. I'll bring some mortar home and fix it later." He pulled a handful of thick-bladed grass and used it as a potholder to take the skillet from her. With his other hand, he flipped the knife into the air, caught it by the point, and held the handle out to her. Nicky took the heavy knife, now scratched and dulled from scraping the bricks clean. He ate standing, using the wooden spoon.
"Are you all right?" she asked.
"Fine," he said around a hot mouthful of eggs. "Why?" Nicky gestured toward the house.
"Well, last night you seemed so defeated."
He frowned at her. "So? I've no right to feel sorry for myself now and again?"
"Well, yes, I suppose. But now I've thought it over."
"And? It's to be my gift to the people, is it? I shall give the people a gift they need."
"What are you talking about?"
Richard waved the wooden spoon. "Brothers Narev and Neil said this will be my gift to the people, and so it shall be." He shoveled more eggs into his mouth.
"So you are going to carve the statue they want?"
He was already running up the stairs before she had finished the question. "I have to get the model of the statue and be off to work." Nicky raced after him up the stairs. He was still eating the eggs as he went. He stood in their room peering down at the small statue on the table as he finished the eggs. She couldn't make sense of it. He was smiling. He set the skillet on the table and scooped up the model. "I'll probably be home late. I have to get started on my penance for the order, if I can. I may have to work all night." In astonishment, she watched him hurry off to work. She could hardly believe that he had once again somehow evaded death. Nicky couldn't recall ever being so grateful about anything. She couldn't understand it. Richard reached the blacksmith shop shortly after Victor had opened up for the day's work. His men had not yet arrived. Victor wasn't surprised to see him. Richard sometimes came early, and the two of them would sit and watch the sun come up over the site.
"Richard, I'm glad to see you."
"And I you, Victor. I need to talk to you." He let out a gruff grunt.
"The statue?"
"That's right," Richard said, a little taken aback. "The statue, you know?" With Richard following behind, Victor made his way through the dark shop, weaving among the clutter of benches, work, and tools.
"Oh, yes, I heard."
Along the way, he stooped to pick up a hammer here, a bar of iron there, and set them on a table, or shove them in a bin, as if one could tidy a mountain by arranging a few pebbles and picking up a fallen limb. "What did you hear?"
"Brother Narev paid me a visit last evening. He said there is to be a dedication of the retreat, to show our respect to the Creator for all he provides for us."
He glanced back over his shoulder as he strode past his huge block of Kavatura marble.
"He told me you are to carve a statue for the entrance plaza, a big statue. He said it is to be done for the dedication. From what I hear from people, from Ishak and others, the order credits the uprising to the drain of building such a monumental project as the retreat, in addition to waging the war. They have armies of men working for the construction, not just here, but from quarries far and wide, to mines for the gold and silver, to forests where they cut the wood. Even slaves must be fed. The purge of officials, leaders, and skilled workers after the uprising was expensive. With a dedication, I think Brother Narev wants to show people the progress, to inspire them, to involve outlying lands in the celebration, believing this will head off further troubles."
In the blackness of the room, only the skylight and the high ceiling above let light cascade down over the stone. The marble took the light deep into its fine crystalline structure and gave it back as a loving gift. Victor opened the double doors that looked out over the retreat.
"Brother Narev told me that your statue is also to be a sundial, with the Creator's light shining down on mankind's torment. He told me I am to oversee the making of the gnomon and dial plane for its shadow to fall upon. He said something about a lightning bolt."
Victor turned around, his eyes following as Richard set the model of the statue on a narrow tool shelf that ran the length of the room.
"Dear spirits," Victor whispered, "that is grotesque."
"They want me to carve this. They want it to be a statue with the power to dominate the grand entrance.
Victor nodded.
Brother Narev said as much. He told me how big would be the metal for the dial plane. He wants bronze.
Can you cast the bronze?
No.
With the backs of his fingers, Victor tapped Richard's arm.
Here is the good part. Few people can cast such a piece. Brother Narev ordered Priskar released to do the casting.
Richard blinked in astonishment.
Priska is alive?
Victor nodded.
High people must have not wanted him buried in the sky in case they needed his skills. They had him locked away in a dungeon. The Order knows they need people with ability. They released him to get this done. If he wants to remain alive and out of the dungeon, he is to cast the bronze at his own expense, as a gift to the people. They say it is his penance. I am to give him the specifications and see to its assembly and placement on the statue.
Victor, I want to buy your stone. The blacksmith's brow slid into an unfriendly frown.
No.
Narev and Neil found out about my civil fine. They think I got off too lightly. They ordered that I carve their statue, much like Priska is to provide the casting, as my penance. I must buy the stone myself, and I must carve it after my work at the site is finished for the day. They want it for this winter's dedication of the retreat. Victor's eyes turned toward the model on the shelf, as if it was some monster come to visit ruin on him.
Richard, you know what this stone means to me. I won't...
Victor, listen to me.
No!
He held his palm up toward Richard.
Don't ask this of me. I don't want this stone to become ugly, like all the Order touches. I won't allow it.
Neither will I. Victor gestured angrily at the model.
That is what you are to carve. How can you even think of that ugliness visiting my pure marble?
I can't. Richard set the plaster model on the floor. He picked up a large hammer, its handle leaning against the wall, and with a mighty blow shattered the abomination into 1,000 pieces. He stood as the white dust slowly billowed over the threshold, out the door and down the hill toward the retreat, like some ghost of evil returning to the underworld. Victor, sell me your stone. Let me liberate the beauty inside. Victor squinted his distrust.
The stone has a flaw. It can't be carved.
I've thought about it. I have a way. I know I can do it.
Victor put his hand to his stone, almost as if he were comforting a loved one in distress.
Victor, you know me. Have I ever done anything to betray you, to harm you?
His voice came softly.
No, Richard, you have not.
Victor, I need this stone. It is the best piece of marble, the way it can take in light and send it back. It has grain that can hold detail. I need the best for this statue. I swear, Victor, if you trust me with it, I will be true to your vision. I won't betray your love of this stone. I swear. The blacksmith gently ran his beefy, calloused hand up the side of the white marble that towered to nearly twice his height.
What if you were to refuse to carve them their statue?
Neil said that then they will take me back to the prison until they get a confession out of me, or until I die from the questioning. I will be buried in the sky and return for nothing.
And if you do as you want instead,
Victor gestured to the fragments of the model,
and don't carve them what they want?
Maybe I would like to see beauty again before I die.
Bah! What would you carve? What would you see before you die? What could be worth your life?
Man's nobility? The most sublime form of beauty. The man's hand paused on the stone, his eyes searching Richard's, but he said nothing.
Victor, I need you to help me. I'm not asking you to give me anything. I'm willing to pay your price. Name it.
Victor returned his loving gaze to his stone.
10 gold marks,
he said with bold confidence, knowing Richard had no money. Richard reached into his pocket and then counted out 10 gold marks. He held the fortune out to Victor. The blacksmith frowned.
Where did you get such money?
I worked, and I saved it. I earned it helping the Order build their palace, remember?
But they took all your money. Nicky told them how much you had, and they took it all.
Richard cocked his head. You didn't think I'd be foolish enough to put all my money in one place, did you? I have gold stashed all over. If this isn't enough, I will pay you whatever you ask. Richard knew that the stone was valuable, although not worth 10 gold marks. But it was to Victor, so Richard would not argue the price. He would pay whatever the man asked.
I can't take your money, Richard.
He waved a hand in resignation.
I don't know how to carve. It was but a dream. As long as I never carved it, I could dream of the beauty in the stone. This is from my homeland, where once there was freedom.
His fingers blindly found the wall of marble.
This is noble stone. I would like to see nobility in this Cavatura marble. You may have the stone, my friend.
No, Victor. I don't want to take your dream. I want to, in a way, fulfill it. I cannot accept it as a gift. I want to buy it.
But why?
Because I will have to give it to the Order. I don't want you giving this to the Order. I will have to do that. More than that, though, they will no doubt want it destroyed. It must be mine when they do that. I want it to be paid for. Victor held out his hand.
10 marks, then.
Richard counted out the 10 gold marks and then closed the man's big fingers around them. Thank you, Victor, Richard whispered. Victor grinned.
Where do you wish me to deliver it?
Richard held out another gold mark. May I rent this room? I would like to carve it here. From here, when I'm done, it can be sledged down to the entrance plaza. Victor shrugged.
Done.
Richard handed over a 12th gold mark. And I want you to make me the tools with which I will carve this stone.
The finest tools you have ever made. The kind of tools used to carve beauty in your homeland. This marble demands the best. Make the tools out of the best steel. Points, tooth chisels, and chisels for fine work. I can make them for you. There are hammers aplenty about you may use.
I also need rasps in a variety of shapes, and files, too. Straight, curved, a wide selection, the finest smoothing files. I need you to get me pumice stones, the fine, white, close-grained pumice, ground to the same shapes to match the rasps and files, and a good supply of powdered pumice, too. Victor's eyes had gone wide. The blacksmith had come from a place where they had once done such carving. He knew full well what it was Richard meant to do.
You intend to do flesh in stone?
I do.
You know how?
Richard knew from statues he had seen in Dehara, and in Adendril, and from what some of the other carvers told him, and from his own tests in his work for the Order's palace, that if carved properly, then smoothed and polished to a high luster, quality marble could take in the light and give it back in a way that seemed to liberate the stone from its hardness, softening it, so that it assumed the look of flesh. If done properly, the marble could seem to almost come alive. I've seen it done before, Victor.
I've carved before. I've learned how to do it. I've thought about it for months.
Ever since I started carving for them, this purpose has kept my mind alive. I've used my work for the Order to practice what I've seen, what I've learned, and what I've thought of on my own. Even before, when they questioned me, I thought about this stone, about the statue I know is in it, to keep my mind from what they did to me.
You mean it helped you endure their torture?
Richard nodded.
I can do it, Victor.
He lifted a fist in firm conviction. Flesh in stone. I only need the proper tools. Victor rattled the gold in his fist.
Done. I can make the proper tools for what you want to do. This is what I know. I don't know how to carve, but but this will be my part, what I can do to bring the beauty out."
Richard clasped forearms with Victor to seal their agreement. "I have one thing I would ask you, as a favor." Victor laughed his deep belly laugh.
"I must feed you lardo, so you may have the strength to carve this noble stone."
Richard smiled. "I wouldn't ever turn down lardo."
"What is it, then?"
Victor asked.
"What is the favor?"
Richard's fingers tenderly touched the stone. His stone.
"No one is to see it until it is done. That includes you. I would like to have a canvas tarp, so I can cover it. I would ask that you not look at it until it is done."
"Why?"
"Because I need it to be mine alone while I carve it. I need solitude with it as I shape it. When I'm finished, then the world can have it. But when I work on it, it is to be my vision and mine alone. I wish no one to see it before it is finished. But most of all, I don't want you to see it, because if anything goes wrong, I don't want you involved in this. I don't want you to know what I do. If you don't see it, you can't be buried in the sky for not telling them."
Victor shrugged.
"If that is your wish, then it shall be so. I will tell the men that the back room is rented, and it is off limits. I will put a lock on the inner door. I will put a chain on the outer double doors here and give you the key."
"Thank you. You don't know what that means to me."
"When do you need the chisels?"
"I need the heavy point to rough it out first. Can you have it done by tonight? I need to get started. There isn't much time."
Victor dismissed Richard's concern with a flourish of his hand.
"The heavy point is easy. I can make that in short order. It will be done when you come from your work down there, your work with the ugliness. Long before you need the other chisels, they will be ready for you to carve beauty."
"Thank you, Victor."
"What is this thank you talk? This is business. You have paid me in advance, value for value between honest men. I can't tell you how good it is to have a customer other than the order."
Victor scratched his head and turned more serious.
"Richard, they will want to see your work, won't they? They will want to see how you are doing on their statue."
"I don't think so. They trust my work. They gave me the model they want scaled up. They have already approved it. They've told me my life depends on this. Neil delighted in telling me how he ordered those other carvers tortured and put to death. He wanted to frighten me. I doubt they will give it a second thought."
"But what if a brother does come wanting to see it?"
"Then I will have to bend an iron bar around his neck and let him pickle in the brine barrel."
Chapter 60 Richard touched the length of the point chisel to his forehead, as he had so often touched the sword of truth there in much the same way. This was no less a battle. This was life and death.
"Blade, be true this day," he whispered.
The chisel had 8 sides, so as to provide grip in a sweaty hand. Victor had given it a proper heavy blunt point. He had also put his initials, VC, in small letters on one of the facets, proclaiming the pride of its maker. Such a heavy chisel would shatter stone and remove a great excess of material in short order. It was a weapon that would do a lot of damage, fracturing the structure of the marble down the width of 3 fingers. A point used carelessly on unnoticed flaws could shatter the entire piece. Finer points would cause shallower fractures, but remove less material. Even with the finest point punches, Richard knew that he could only approach to within the last half finger of the final layer. The network of spidery cracks left by a point were fractures in the crystalline structure of the marble itself. So damaged, the stone lost its translucence and its ability to take a high polish. To do flesh in stone, the final layers had to be approached with care and be left undamaged by any tool. After the heavy point removed much of the waste, then finer point chisels would allow Richard to get closer, refining the shape. Once he was within as close as a half finger of the final layer, he would turn to the clawed chisels, simply chisels with notches in their edge, to shear away the stone without fracturing the underlying structure of the marble. The coarse claws took off the most stone, leaving rough gouges. He would use chisels with a series of finer and finer teeth to refine the work. Finally, he would use smooth-bladed chisels, some only half as wide as his little finger. Down at the site, where he carved scenes for the frieze, that was as far as the carvers went. It left an ugly surface, ungainly and coarse, rendering flesh as wooden, leaving no definition or refinement to muscle and bone. It robbed the people in the carvings of their humanity. On this statue, Richard would really only begin where the carvings for the order ended. He would use rasps to define bone, muscle, even veins in the arms. Fine files would remove the marks left by the rasps and refine the most subtle contours. The pumice stones would remove the filing marks, leaving the surface ready to polish with pumice paste held in leather, cloth, and finally straw. If he did it right, he would have his vision in stone. Flesh in stone. Nobility. Holding the heavy point chisel to his palm with his thumb, Richard put his hand to the stone, feeling its cool surface. He knew what was inside. Inside not only the stone, but inside himself. There were no doubts, only the heart-pounding passion of expectation. As he so often did, Richard thought of Caelan. It had been nearly a year since he had looked into her green eyes, touched her cheek, held her in his arms. She would have long ago left the safety of their home for dangers he could vividly imagine. For a moment he was overwhelmed with the weight of despair, choked by the sadness of how much he missed her, humbled at how much he loved her. Now he knew he must dismiss her from his mind so that he could devote himself entirely to the task he had to do. As he so often did, Richard said his silent goodnight to Caelan. Then he set the point at 90 degrees to the face of the stone and took a powerful swing with the steel club. Stone chips exploded away. His breaths came deeper and faster. It was begun. With great violence, Richard attacked the stone. By the light of lamps Victor left for him after the workday was done, Richard lost himself in the work, raining down blow upon blow. Sharp stone chips rattled off the wooden walls and stung when they hit his arms or chest. With a clear vision of what he wanted to do, he broke away the waste stone. His ears rang with the sound of steel on steel and steel on stone. It was music. Jagged chips and chunks fell away. They were the fallen enemy. The air boiled with the white dust of battle. Richard knew precisely what he wanted to accomplish. He knew what needed to be done and how to do it. He was filled with a clarity of purpose, a course to follow. Now that it had begun, he was lost in the work. Dust billowed up around him until his dark clothes were white, as if the stone were absorbing him, as he was transforming with it, until they were one. Sharp shards nicked him as they shot away. His bare arms, white as the marble itself, were soon streaked here and there with blood from the battle. From time to time he opened the doors to shovel out the ankle-deep scree. The white scrap avalanched down the hill, tinkling with a sound like a thousand tiny bells. The white dust covering him was cut through with dark rivulets of sweat and red scratches. The cool air felt refreshing against his sweat-soaked skin, but then he once again shut out the night, shut out the world to be alone. For the first time in nearly a year, Richard felt free. In this he was in complete control. No one watched him. No one told him what he must do. This work was his singular purpose, in which he strove for perfection. There were no chains, no limitations, no desires of others to which he must bow. In this struggle to accomplish his best, he was utterly free. What he intended would stand in unyielding opposition to everything the order represented. He intended to show them life. Richard knew that when the brothers saw the statue, they would sentence him to death. Stone chips burst forth with each blow, taking him closer to his goal. He had to stand on a work stool to reach the top of the marble, moving it around the monolith to work all sides, narrowing it down to what would be. Richard swung the steel club with the fury of battle. His chisel hand stung with the ringing blows. As violent as the attack was, though, it was controlled. A trimming hammer, called a pitcher, could be used for such rough work. It removed waste with greater speed than a heavy point to shape the block, but it was used with a full swing, and Richard feared, because of the flaw, to unleash that much power against the stone. In the beginning, the block had strength in its sheer mass, but even so, he considered such a trimming hammer too dangerous for this particular stone. Richard would have Victor make him a set of drill bits for a bow drill. With a bow's cord run around the shaft of the drill, it could be twisted and driven through the marble. Richard had thought long and hard about the problem of the flaw. He had resolved to cut out most of it. First, to stop any further cracks from running through more of the stone, he would drill holes through the crack to relieve the stress. With another series of closely spaced holes, he would weaken the stone in a waste area around the flaw and simply remove most of it. There would be two figures, a man and a woman. When finished, the space between them would be where Richard had removed the worst of the flaw. With the weakest stone removed, the sound stone that remained would be strong enough to take the stress of the work. Since the defect started at the base, he couldn't eliminate it all, but he could reduce the problem it presented to a manageable level. That was the secret to this piece of stone, eliminating its weakness, then working in its strength. Richard considered it a fortunate flaw, first of all because it had reduced the value of the stone, enabling Victor to purchase it in the first place. To Richard's mind, though, the flaw had been valuable because it had caused him to think about the stone and how to carve it. That thought had brought him to his design. Without the flaw, he might not have come to the same design. As he worked, he was filled with the energy of the fight, driven onward by the heat of the attack. Stone stood between him and what he wanted to carve, and he craved to eliminate that excess so he could get to the essence of the figures. A huge corner of waste broke loose, slipping away, slowly at first, then crashing down. Chips and shards rained down as he worked, burying the fallen foe. Several more times he had to open the doors and shovel out the scrap. It was invigorating to see what was once an irregular-shaped block becoming a rough shape. The figures were still completely encased, their arms far from being free, their legs not separate yet, but they were beginning to emerge. He would have to be careful, drilling holes in the open areas to prevent breaking off the arms. Richard was surprised to see light streaming through the window overhead. He had worked the entire night without realizing it. He stood back and appraised the statue that was now more or less roughly a cone shape. Now there were only lumps where the arms would extend out from the bodies. He wanted the arms to be free, the bodies to convey grace and movement. Life. What he carved for the order was never free, always tightly bound to the stone, forever stiff, unable to move, like cadavers. Half of what had been there the night before was now gone. Richard ached to stay and work on, but he knew he couldn't. From the corner, he excavated the canvas tarp Victor had left for him and flung it over the statue. When he threw open the door, the white dust billowed out. Victor was sitting among the rubble of his stone monolith. The blacksmith blinked.
"Richard, you have been here the whole night."
"I guess I have." He gestured as a grin split his face.
"You look like a good spirit. How goes the battle with the stone?"
Richard could think of nothing to say. He could only beam with the joy of it. Victor laughed his belly laugh.
"Your face says it all. You must be tired and hungry. Come, sit and rest. Have some lardo."
Nicky heard Camille and Nobby shout a greeting as Richard came down the street, and then their footsteps as they ran down the front stairs. She glanced out the front window, and in the failing light of dusk saw them meet up with Richard as he came down the street. She, too, was happy to see him coming home this early. Nicky had seen precious little of Richard in the weeks since he took on the duty of carving the statue for Brother Narev. She couldn't imagine how Richard could endure carving a statue she knew had to be agony for him, not so much because of its size, but because of its nature. If anything, though, Richard seemed invigorated. Often, after working all day carving the moral lessons for the facade of the palace, he would then work late into the night on the grand statue for the entrance plaza. As tired as he had to be when he came home, he would sometimes pace. There were nights when he would only sleep for a couple of hours, rise and go to work on the statue for hours before his workday at the site began. Several times he had worked the entire night. Richard seemed driven. Nicky didn't know how he could do it. He sometimes came home to eat and take a nap for an hour, and then he would go back. She would urge him to stay and sleep, but he would say that the penance had to be paid, or they would put him back in prison. Nicky feared that possibility, so she didn't insist that he stay home to sleep. Losing sleep was preferable to him losing his life. He had always been muscular and strong, but his muscles had become even more lean and defined since coming to the old world. All that labor of loading iron and now moving rock and swinging a hammer had built him up even more. When he went out back to the washtubs and removed his shirt to rinse off the stone dust, the sight of him made her knees weak. Nicky heard footsteps passing down the hallway, and the excited voices of Camille and Nabi asking questions. She couldn't understand Richard's words, but she easily recognized the timbre of his voice calmly giving the two the answers to their questions. As tired as he was, as much as he was away at his work, he still took time to talk to Camille and Nabi, and to the people of the building. He was no doubt now on his way out back to give pointers to the two young men on their carving. During the day they worked around the building, cleaning and caring for the place. They turned over the dirt in the garden, mixing in the compost when it was ready. The women appreciated having the heavy spade work done for them. The two washed, painted, and repaired, hoping Richard would approve and then show them how to do new things. Camille and Nabi always offered to help Nicky with anything she might need. She was, after all, Richard's wife. Richard came in the door as Nicky stood at the table, cutting up carrots and onions into a pot. He slumped down into the chair across the table. He looked spent from his day of work, after having been up hours earlier working on the statue. "I came home to get something to eat. I have to go back and work on the statue. This is for tomorrow's stew. I have some millet cooked. Is there anything more in it?" She shook her head. "I only had enough money for the millet today." He nodded without complaint. Despite how exhausted he looked, there was some remarkable quality in his eyes, some inner passion that made her pulse race faster. Whatever it was that she had seen in him from the first moment seemed to have only gotten stronger since that night she had almost put the knife through his heart. "Tomorrow we'll have this stew," she said. His gray eyes were staring off into his private visions. "From the garden." She retrieved the cookpot after setting a wooden bowl on the table before him and spooned millet into his bowl until it was full. There was little left, but he needed it more than she. She had spent the morning waiting in line for the millet, and then had spent the afternoon picking all the worms out of it. Some of the women just cooked it until you couldn't tell. Nicky didn't like to feed that to Richard. Standing close to the table, cutting up carrots, she could finally stand it no more. "Richard, I want to come to the site with you and see this statue that you're carving for the order." He was silent for a moment as he chewed and then swallowed. When he finally did speak, it was with a quiet quality that matched that inexplicable look in his eyes. "I want you to see the statue, Nicky. I want everyone to see it, but not until I'm finished." "Why?" He stirred his spoon around in his bowl. "Please, Nicky, will you grant me this? Let me finish it. Then you will see it." Her heart pounded against her ribs. This was important to him. "You aren't carving what they told you to carve, are you?" Richard's face turned up until his gaze met hers. "No, I'm not. I'm carving what I need to carve, what people need to see." Nicky swallowed. She knew. This was what she had been waiting for. He had been ready to give up. Then he wanted to live, and now he was willing to die for this.
This is the end of this cassette. This program is continued on side one of cassette number 18.